I know I bang on about it, but it really is hard getting women onto soundtracking. Such is the male dominance in the industry. But every now and again, we succeed. In this case, with the supremely gifted writer, director, Clive Bernard. Her latest offering is Dark River, which is available on home entertainment formats now. Starring Ruth Wilson, Mark Stanley, and Sean Bean, tells the story of a woman who returns home after a 15-year absence to claim the tenancy of her father's farm. As well as featuring a new track by PJ Harvey, Dark River is scored by Harry Escott, who has worked with Clio on all three of her features, starting with her debut, The Arbor. Before we kick off with one of Harry's cues from that film, I should warn you that this episode contains a major spoiler relating to her fantastic second movie, The Selfish Giant. Hello, welcome to Soundtracking. I just said I get so excited when I see that you have a new film coming out because we've just had this wonderful collection of your storytelling for The Arbor and Selfish Giant and Dark River. And what I think you just do so well is, as I said, you're just a great storyteller and through characters. Where did this story and the seed and the idea for Dark River come about, first of all?
It came from a novel by Rose Tremain called Trespass. It's about two sets of adult siblings, but I was really interested in Audrun and Aramon, as they're called in the novel, and they became Alice and Joe. And I was really interested in the relationship between them and their, in a way, desperation to connect, but their inability to connect with each other.
And also that relationship and how it's quite solitary in terms of their location and their upbringing and the environment that they're brought in as well, and how that's, it's a character in the film itself, really. Was that easy to kind of put down in a script?
Yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot in the script of, I guess, that are scene directions, but that are, I hope, quite evoked the atmosphere that I wanted to get at and the kind of how important the landscape was and how important the animals in the landscape was and how important the sort of the natural elements within the film were, as well as the house.
Yeah.
And finding the house was actually really important. So at a certain point, we found a house and I spent time with farmers, and then the script kind of adjusted again and changed again.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Whilst you were in that environment.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
You've amazingly got this. I mean, you've worked with Harry Escott throughout your films, who we'll talk about in a second, but you have the wonderful PJ Harvey, who has lent her talents to this film with a beautiful song called An Acre of Land. How did that come about? How did PJ get involved in this project?
Well, I mean, I've loved her work for a very long time.
Same.
Yeah, I think she's amazing. I really love her work. And I suppose Let England Shake and White Chalk have, there's a kind of relationship with, I think, what I was trying to do in Dark River in some ways.
To come.
wrote me a letter, which I was very excited about, after she'd seen The Selfish Giant. So, yeah, I was very thrilled to get a letter from her.
Wow.
And so we met up and we talked about, you know, the possibility of working together. And, you know, I've worked with Harry for all of the films that I've made, and I like to work with score in a really particular way so that it never leads you emotionally,
yeah,
but it kind of supports what's there emotionally, and it's quite minimal. Mm-hmm. So the only room really for anything more melodic is kind of at the beginning and the end. So it seemed to me that a really good way for us all to work together was to find a song that she could sing that would kind of top and tail the film. So I sent her the script, and she read it and was very excited about it because she grew up on a sheep farm.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and she was writing, at the time she was writing poems about sheep. And we were kind of reading the same stuff. So there's these really brilliant Ted Hughes poems, mm-hmm, called Moortown Diary, when he was working as a farmer. So we had very the same kind of points of reference. And Harry had the same points of reference. So we kind of all came with very similar suggestions for what we thought that song might be at that point.
My father left me an acre of land. Sing ivy, sing ivy. My father left me an acre of land. Sing holly, go whistle and ivy. I ploughed it with a ram's horn. Sing ivy, sing ivy. And sowed it all over with one peppercorn. Sing holly, go whistle and ivy. Sing holly, go whistle and
I mean, I love synergy and how things happen for a reason, and that's just a great example of kind of those moments where you go, wow, really? Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And then were you there throughout the whole process of the creation of that song and the recording of it, and, you know, were you part of that?
So, you know, Harry obviously does a lot of work by himself without
yeah.
But so what happened was, well, we were cutting. Oh, this is the process that we usually do. Is at a certain point in the edit, he'll come in and watch,
yeah,
and then kind of go away and kind of mull on it and come up with different ideas. And sometimes he's sending little bits and pieces through. So, for example, there's a bit where it's hard to tell it without giving things away, but there's a bit where that felt like Alice might be hiding something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the feedback from one of the screenings, and I didn't want it, I wanted it to be more ritualistic, mm-hmm, like it was a ritual of burial, really. And so I knew I needed some kind of score there that got that across.
Yeah.
So Harry scored something for there to help us see whether or not that moment was going to work. So he'll kind of send little bits and pieces as we go along. And then the song came probably two-thirds of the way into the edit, something like that, where we knew that this was the right place for it. And I think he tried a couple of things, but I can't remember what the other thing was now. But the thing about that particular children's rhyme, because it's a children's rhyme, it's a traditional children's rhyme, is that it sets so much up narratively, but
yeah,
also there's a kind of implicit thing about the history of the land and the history of land ownership.
sing Holly. Go whistle and ivy, sing Holly. Go whistle and
one of those characters that she's very private, and you never know much behind the name PJ Harvey, really. And this, for me, sounds like a very different sound in PJ Harvey. Mm. I think if you heard the track without knowing it was her, you wouldn't immediately know it was her. And I think that that's beautiful. It's a softer, I don't know, it just sounds, and it feels like it's because she's made such a connection with the story. Mm. I don't know whether that's the reason or not, but it just sounds, it's so beautiful. Mm. So beautiful. There's not really a question there. It's just more of an observation in terms of how the song kind of makes me feel. Can we talk a bit more about Harry and how that relationship started? Because, you know, as you say, you've worked together since the Arbour. Is that the first? Mm. How did you meet, and why was he the right person, and why did you want to continue working with your films?
It's a good question, actually, about how it first started, because I actually can't remember, but I think I was probably...
He just appeared in your life.
He appeared, yeah.
Because Molly worked on the Arbour with him as well, Molly Nyman, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I probably at that point was looking at different composers and listening to different composers, and I really liked what they'd done on... there's a Nick Brumfield film,
yeah,
which I really loved what they'd done on that. I met with them and I loved what they did on the Arbour. And so I knew I wanted to work, with Harry again. And I really loved what he did on The Selfish Giant. Mm. And he's also worked quite closely with Tim Barker, who's the sound designer that I work with. So they're very collaborative in terms of the way they work with each other, because sometimes Harry's working with concrete sounds. So like on The Selfish Giant, he was working with, you know, sounds from the scrapyard. So Tim will send him some of the sounds that he's recorded on set, and then Harry will make them into tones and work with them in a more musical way, a scoring way. So, yeah.
That's what I think's the beautiful synergy with the films of those three people, you know, the director, sound designer, and the composer. You never want to see those breaks. You never want to see any seams. You know, and I think with your films in particular, the environment is such an important part of the storytelling. And Selfish Jam being a great example, you know, talk about those, the steel yard and those sounds of even the sounds of the horse and the mm-hmm. cart and things like that, and how those, it's important to hear those as much as it is important to hear a small piece of score weave its way in. And I love how you almost hold back, I think. I think people can be too quick sometimes to throw score at a film where there's maybe silence, but silence is as important to use as sounds.
Yeah, definitely. It's really important. And sometimes I think there's score there that people don't actually consciously hear.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I kind of knew Harry was really brilliant, because on the Arbor there's score that's really subtle that I don't think you hear. Same on The Selfish Giant, you know, there's something that builds really, really slowly. And there was, I guess there's a moment in The Selfish Giant similarly to the one that I just mentioned in Dark River where we really needed score to help with understanding. And it was after, I can talk, give this one away, I guess. after Swifty's died and he's taking the body away, it's a crane shot looking out over the landscape, and he's kind of going into the distance. It felt like the movie was finishing, and it wasn't.
Yeah, definitely wasn't. Yeah.
So there was a like beautiful bit of scoring that he did where it's kind of drifting down and pulling you away, so that you know there's more to come.
So clever, you know, kind of thinking about score being there for a specific reason.
Mm.
You know, whether that's to almost give the audience direction, to give them information, but then also characterization of people as well. It does a great job in that. And I wanted to know if that was something you spoke to Hardy about, in terms of not there being, not certain characters having themes that kind of come and go, but whether you think about creating sounds and pieces of score specifically for characters.
Well, in some ways, you might need to talk to Harry about that. But the thing that I really loved in The Arbor was that he used a harmonium, and you know, so he'll find things, instrumentation, which is really specific and appropriate for, you know, for each film. So with The Selfish Giant, there was some, I mean, it's subtle, but there was a kind of Western thing going on in the mm-hmm. score, and also a kind of northern thing. And I guess with Dark River, there's, you know, there's the folk song, so that and because it needs to be a coherent whole, obviously that finding that song was really important in terms of what then came in the middle in between.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's really interesting because every composer works differently, and you know, in Hardy, I was blown away by his score for Shame, for example, which I just thought was so powerful.
Yeah.
And kind of a great example of where if you take the score away from the film, it really affects, I think, the power and strength of the film as well. But he's such a clever and talented because he can do both sides of that, where the subtleties are as important as the kind of power of things as well. I wanted to ask as well about writing and how you decide what's next. What helps you form those decisions?
It's a good question, and it's a kind of, there's a kind of impulse. It's a bit like a seed, and about sort of recognizing that. And then I've just started something new, and that bit is really exciting because you kind of think, oh, there's a seed of something there. Oh, and that connects back to that, and that connects back to that. So stuff that I might be mulling over for quite a long time, but not in a totally conscious way. And then, you know, I usually start by sitting down and writing something that's quite short, like 4 pages about what I think it might be. And that's really fun because that's the sort of inspiration moment.
Yeah.
And then it gets hard.
Then you're in your shed listening to all sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Well, actually, I've kind of decided to not go into the shed and to go and talk to people. Because in some ways, Dark River was a bit of a departure from the way that I usually work.
Yeah.
So I'm starting with... the seeds of an idea, a kind of rough kind of concept of what I want to do, and then I'm going kind of on the ground to talk to people and starting that way.
Brilliant. Do you use music when you're writing at all? Do you listen to music when you're writing, or do you need silence? Or
I do, actually. I do, and I can get really distracted by music. So, you know, I'll kind of think, oh, I just need to look up this artist. Oh, I better look up that one. So I can kind of go down a Spotify rabbit hole, basically, and not get the writing done. So I have to be quite strict about music. So music that doesn't have lyrics, you know, and I will. There's songs that I'll listen to over and over and over again that are associated with the film that I'm working on, but I won't be used in the film. So I think, yeah, with The Self-Giant, it was this Will Oldham track that I just played over and over and over again. It was slightly obsessively.
Do you remember what it was called?
It's called I See a Darkness. It's a really, really beautiful song.
Well, I hope that someday, buddy, we have peace in our lives, together or apart, alone or with our wives, that we can stop our whoring and pull the smiles inside and light it up forever and never go to sleep. My best unbeaten brother, this isn't all I see. Somehow you can save me from this darkness.
And I kind of had an Arbor soundtrack as well, but they're more things that I don't think, oh, I'm consciously going to make an Arbor soundtrack, or I'm consciously going to make a Selfish Giant soundtrack or a Dark River. They sort of evolve, and they're songs that I completely associate with that film.
Yeah.
But they're more things that I'll listen to in between writing or on my way home on the train after editing. But in terms of what I listen to when I write, it has to be without lyrics. So quite often it's something like Steve Reich or minimalist stuff.
Yeah.
Then there was a certain point where I made this playlist of sound effects, which was quite weird because I'd sit in my... I've got a shed at the bottom of my garden that I write in, so it'd be like blazing hot sunshine, I'm listening to rain and on my headphones, you know?
Like, yeah.
So I put my headphones on. So yeah, that was kind of a lot of sounds that would evoke the environment.
Yeah. Whilst you were there on the farm as well, Did you have music with you, or was it just the sounds of the environment you needed around you then?
When we were shooting, I mean, they were really long days because, you know, it was a kind of your regular long shooting day.
Yeah.
And then I'd go into the cutting room because it was kind of right opposite where I was staying. And we were kind of, some days we were doing really weird hours because of the night shoots. So I didn't actually have much time to listen to music. So actually, what I did, what quite often did, was when I got back to where I was staying and to unwind, I'd watch comedy or listen to comedy.
Great. That's such a great idea.
Stuart Lee or...
Great.
Something that would really, really make me laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I really needed it because, it's a difficult film. It's difficult subject matter and it was quite intense.
The casting's incredible. I mean, Ruth's just... I mean, you look at her and she very much... You believe her as a sheep farmer for a start. The way she, at the start, when you see her shearing the sheep, you're kind of like, man, she really knows what she's doing. Mm. But she's so connected to that land. Was that something that was natural with her? Was it something that she worked on?
It's something that she worked on. I mean, she's phenomenally committed. And, you know, both of them are, both she and Mark. So she went and worked with the farmers that I'd met when I was writing the script. And, you know, she was... clipping feet, castrating lambs, and
bloody hell!
Yeah, and I think she taught the farmer how to skin a rabbit rather than the other way around.
Wow!
Yeah,
it's a good skill.
That's amazing. Yeah, she's absolutely brilliant. She's fearless.
Yeah,
you know, she really is, because there was a lot of things she had to get right. She had to get the accent right.
Mm-hmm.
You had to really believe she'd been shearing sheep for all that time. You had to believe she had this absolute connection with the land.
She's such a great female character as well, that you've, you know, adapted from this great story.
Thank you. Really, really, really
beautiful. What are the soundtracks or scores that made an impression on you as a film fan over the years? Are there any that stand out?
Wow, there's none that actually pop in my head straight away, because I think I quite like things that are quite minimal and subtle and stripped back.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is kind of a ridiculous example in a way, because it's like the absolute opposite of what I just said. But I love West Side Story. And it's partly the lyrics, you know, so Officer Krupke, I just think is a really fantastic song. That's the one that popped into my head.
That's a great example.
Yeah.
Are you a musical fan? I wouldn't have taken you as a musical fan. Are you a musical fan?
Not really, but I just really love that film. It's partly because my kids, for some reason, just love it. I think they love that song in particular because it's really funny.
Yeah.
But it's really acerbic and it's so political.
Yeah. My 9-year-old recently went to the Barbican where the London Symphony Orchestra played it, and the kids all got to get up on stage and sing America.
no way. Oh my God, I wish I'd known. I would have taken my kids.
It was such a great excuse to have the music just constantly around the house.
Wow, that's so brilliant.
Yeah, it was really, really special.
Yeah.
Claire, it's a really pleasure to talk to you as always, and I really, really can't wait for what's next, but congratulations on Dark River.
Thank you. Real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
See them cops? They believe everything they read in the papers about us cruddy JDs. So that's what we give them. Something to believe in.
Hey, you!
Who, me, Officer Krupke?
Yeah, you! Give me one good reason for not dragging you down to the station house, you punk!
Dear kindly Sergeant Krupke, you gotta understand, it's just our bringing up key that gets us out of hand. Our mothers all are junkies, our fathers all are drunks. Golly Moses, naturally we're punks.
Gee, Officer Krupke, we're very upset. We never had the love that every child ought to get. We ain't no delinquents, we're misunderstood. Deep down inside us, there is good.
There is good,
there is good, there is good, there is untapped good. Like inside, the worst of us is good.
That's a touching good story.
Let me tell it to the world.
Just tell it to the church.
Dear kindly judge your honor, my parents treat me rough with all their marijuana. They won't give me a puff. They didn't want to have me, but somehow I was had. Leap on lizards, that's why I'm so bad.
Right, Officer Krupke, you're really a square. This boy don't need a judge, he needs an analyst care. It's just his neurosis that ought to be quite. He's psychologically disturbed.
I'm disturbed.
We're disturbed. We're disturbed. We're the most disturbed. Like we're psychologically disturbed.
From West Side Story, that's G. Officer Krupke rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Clara Bernard. My huge thanks to Clara for taking the time to talk to us. Dark River is available on home entertainment formats now. I wanted to take a moment to update you on Bumble Presents, the female film force, an initiative offering unique grants to aspiring female filmmakers across the UK and Ireland. Applications are now closed, but we wanted to announce that there were well over 1,000 applications, and Bumble have been blown away by the creativity and courage of the ideas submitted by talented writers, directors and producers, all women. Centred around Bumble's core values of kindness, respect, empowerment and equality, a panel of industry experts are now deliberating over the applications to select the final 10 women who will be invited along to an inclusive pitch day at the end of July. I'll then be chairing that panel alongside Kate Kinnamont, Chief Executive of Women in Film and TV, Ophelia Loverbond, Georgina Campbell and more, to select our final 5 from that 10 of formidable women to make short films that we hope will go some way to address this industry imbalance. They'll benefit from a £20,000 production budget and a bespoke mentorship programme. According to Women in Film and TV, women comprised only 18% of directors, writers, producers, executive producers, editors and cinematographers working on the top 250 grossing films of 2017. This represents only a 1% improvement on 2016. While those statistics are saddening, Bumble is committed to fighting for equality in all industries, and we can't wait to share the empowering, brilliant stories the female film force propose in the coming weeks and months. Next week, however, we are joined by award-winning director Kevin McDonald, talking about his brand new film, a documentary about Whitney Houston. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.